Am I on this time? Excellent. All right. Tonight we'll be reading from Galatians chapter 2, and I apologize ahead of time. I'm not an eloquent orator like Apollos or Pastor McGovern. That's not my style. But I do love the Lord, so like Greg said, hopefully you'll look at me and pay attention, and I'll get excited that maybe I'm not so boring, and I'll say something a little bit fun up here. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I know Roy will be listening, so he can give me advice. And we're going to be reading from Galatians chapter 2 tonight. But before we begin, I'd like to open up in prayer. Father, I thank you so much for the privilege it is to fill this pulpit while a pastor is gone from us, Lord. And most of all, Father, I hope that you are taking care of him wherever he is and whatever leg of his travel he's in right now, Father, that you'll give him safety. And most of all, you'll be giving him wisdom. That church there, they do not have someone who can just fill in at a moment's call like here. And I hope that he finds men there who will be diligent and will love you and will be able to take over and be able to just lead that church in the right direction while he's not there in country with him, Lord. We praise you and thank you. Amen. All right, we're going to read from Galatians chapter 2 tonight. We're going to start in verse 6, and we're going to read a good section of the chapter, but we're not going to be hitting all of that, so don't worry. I won't keep you here till 9 o'clock. So starting in verse 6, "But of those who seem to be somewhat, whatsoever they were, it maketh no matter to me. God accepteth no man's persons, for they who seem to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. But contrariwise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcision was unto Peter." So I'm going to stop right there and say that the book of Galatians is really interesting because I've been teaching this at the VA, and we took a little break because we have some new folks coming in, so I've been giving them a gospel message lately. But getting to study through Galatians is very interesting because the whole book is designed around what is truth and what is genuine truth. Because Paul, if you go back to chapter 1, Paul, in the section in chapter 1, he's describing, you know, what is genuine gospel? He's talking about what is truth? What is this? And so I actually, if we are starting and going all the way through this, I start out with a little test that I give the guys where I show them a penny, and I say, it's a picture of all these pennies that look different, and I say, you guys look at money and you handle it all the time. Now, which one is the real penny? And they look at it and they can't figure it out when it actually was the very first one on the picture. And there's only about 10 of them on the sheet, but they look at it and they say, I don't know which one it is. And then I put a real penny on the table, and I say, now which one's the real penny? And, oh, well, A, that's the real penny. Well, it's obvious because the truth is in front of you. And so the book of Galatians is exactly that. The truth is right in front of us in Galatians, and Paul is fighting for that truth. And he's saying, you know what, there's these Judaizers who have come in. There's these men who think that the Gentiles are corrupting the church, which, to a point, they were. But the Gentiles were coming in. They were causing this loss of traditions that they relied on. The Jews were heavily steeped in tradition. And so they thought, you know, these Gentiles come in, they're going to ruin everything. They're going to take away all of that we have earned as a nation that God has given us. And Jesus Christ did that when he destroyed the temple. And so they were a little bit bitter about that. But just joking around one day with Pastor, I asked him, I said, hey, could the church handle, you know, a few people getting saved, coming in, you know, rough around the edges folks? Oh, sure, of course, good. How about 500 at once? That would be difficult, right? How would we handle that? Well, this is what was happening as Paul was going around preaching in all these nations, all these parts of the world. He was converting Gentiles left and right. But where did they go to church? They went to the synagogues. They went to the places where the Jews were previously worshiping as Jews, and now they're flooding in these huge numbers, paganism, all of this coming right into the church. And so, rightly so, the Jews were scared. But Paul warns them later in chapter 1, he says, I understand you have a fervor for God, but it's misplaced. It's not in those traditions anymore. It's not. You're worshiping the traditions over the God of those traditions. And so these Gentiles, though, they were bringing in a lot into the picture that didn't used to be there before. A lot of sins of sexuality, of idol worshiping, all of this paganism coming in. And so in chapter 2, when Paul starts out, he has already been to the council in Jerusalem in Acts 15. He's already decided, hey, I was with the disciples. I was with the apostles. I was with James, the pastor of the church in Jerusalem. And it was decided when he pronounced it right there that, hey, there's a few groundworks we're going to have for the Jews. But you know what? Jesus Christ is the way and is the only way. And so when Paul is writing this letter, he knows that this has already taken place. And he's going to go through and say how he has fellowship with these men, the ones who are making the decisions, the ones who they know are the apostles. Because Paul was separated from the apostles in a way, because he was converted after Jesus Christ had been here, afterwards. And so some thought that maybe Paul was watering down the gospel for the sake of making it appealing to Gentiles, because the traditions were difficult. So in order to become a proselyte Jew, you had to go through all of these processes to get to being a proselyte Jew, meaning you weren't originally born Jewish, and now you're going to work your way through this series of rituals and traditions to become Jewish. When Paul came in, he was saying, no more of that. No more. You don't have to have any of that. And they're saying, you're watering it down. You're making it weak. And we still see that today. We'll go over it. That they believe that just faith in Jesus Christ is weak. That's not enough. And so Paul's saying that these men who seem to be somewhat, who were in the higher echelons of society, I preached to them the gospel. They added nothing to me. He's not being proud or cocky about it. He's saying, no matter who you are, God does not respect persons. He's saying that you and where you sit and who you are in society has nothing to do and adds nothing to the gospel of Jesus Christ. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what position you hold in a church. It doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States. You can't add to the gospel of Jesus Christ. So he's saying, you can't add to me because God has already added everything to me through his son, Jesus Christ. You can't take anything else. You can't add anything else to that. So we're going to continue at verse 8. For he that wrought effectually in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty in me towards the Gentiles, as we already saw with Paul. He was mighty with the Gentiles. And when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given unto me, they gave me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the heathen and they unto the circumcision. So right there he's saying, look, I'm the same status as the other apostles. He's already been through Galatia. He's set up these churches. He's set up elders in these churches who really did love God, which is what I'm hoping that Pastor McGovern will find when he gets there. Hopefully he'll find someone who genuinely loves God, and he will be able to train them to start taking over, because that's what he needs there. He needs someone who's going to step up and be an elder in the church and love God and want to study and know more about him so that they can teach. And so that's what he needs over there. And Paul is saying, I've been to the Gentiles already. I've set up these things, and I have a gift with these Gentiles. And we'll get out of teaching mode in a little bit and start preaching here in a moment, I promise. And only they would that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. I always thought that was kind of random he said that, but charity is pretty important. But that would be for a whole other sermon about Romans 13 and the government providing for the poor and our role for all of that. That's a whole other sermon there. But now we're going to get into the meat of where the sermon's at tonight in verse 11. Because this is actually what we're going to look at tonight. Because we're going to see a clash between Paul and Peter, two greats of the church, two apostles who, if you think of apostles, these were the two men that you picture. You picture Paul, you know, the rock, very strong. He, you know, with his dark-colored, curly hair, his very rough, rugged features, the fisherman, he was very bold. And then you look at Paul, and he was very meek in appearance. We know that from Scripture. But he was very bold in his speech. And these two men, when you think of apostles and the starting of the New Testament churches, these are the two men that you picture above everybody else that did the most work. They were the apostles in our minds. And we're going to see them clash a bit tonight. And we're going to see the result of what happens when Paul confronts Peter about his behavior. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. Remember, talking about the Judaizers bringing in the traditions in the church. So Peter's to be blamed for something along those lines in here. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also carried away with their dissimulation. Now we're going to stop right there. And we're going to turn to Proverbs. Proverbs gives lots of good advice in life. But seeing an example from Scripture of when this actually happens is going to be Proverbs chapter 25, verses 26 through 28. Proverbs 25, 26 through 28. My wife complains that when the preachers don't repeat it twice, she doesn't catch it, so that's why I do that. If she's happy, I'll be happy. Hence the purpose of Mother's Day. It's one day you get to put forth the effort to make sure you're happy by making Mama happy. You will sleep well tonight if you did the right thing, like Greg said. Call your mom. You will sleep fine. All right, looking at verse 26, it says, "A righteous man falling down before the wicked is a troubled fountain and a corrupt spring." Remember this, a corrupt spring. This is going to come into play with Peter. "It is not good to eat much honey, for men to search their own glory is not glory." Again, note that. Searching your own glory is not glory. "He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls." And we'll be going back to Galatians, but if you were at the men's breakfast this quarter, Pastor was talking about Nehemiah and Ezra and the walls coming down. And when you read that proverb now, and you were at that men's breakfast, that has a little bit of a different understanding than it did before. Not that he was revealing an extra truth. It was that he was showing you, when God says the walls are torn down, he's saying that you have no protection against what you believe. The holiness that you have is Jesus Christ. The walls you set up are the protection in your life to keep that holiness from becoming corrupt. And Peter has a section of his wall that broke down, and Paul's calling him out about it. And so today's message, we're going to talk about a bad word that people do not like. I mean, if I was standing at a Democratic convention, I would probably be thrown out for saying this word and agreeing with its existence. But dogmatic. Dogmatic. It's a word that people don't like anymore. Because truth has become something that is just, ambiguous. It's something that you make up on the fly as you go. It's whatever feels right to you is the truth. And Pastor preaches on it all the time. Especially when he gave the example of the man who said, "I want to be a 7-year-old Asian girl. Is that okay?" Under their own understanding of truth, they have to say yes. It's ridiculous. But when you say dogmatic, what does that mean? I mean, Webster defines dogmatic. I have to read it here. Webster defines dogmatic as to lay down principles is incontrovertibly true. Meaning, without compromise, this is the truth. Of course, based on the word dogma, meaning it's a belief in some sort of religious principle. To us, that's God. So we're saying that's incontrovertibly true, what is said. So is it wrong to be dogmatic? Because today it means opinionated, assertive, inflexible, intolerant. A word that people use a lot today. Don't be so intolerant. And I found it funny when I looked up the definition of dogmatic. The example Webster's gave, just giving light of our society today, was he gave his opinions without being dogmatic. You're like, okay. Well, that's because that's what people want now. They don't want you to be dogmatic. And so as we look at Scripture, we say, is it wrong to be dogmatic about what you say? Is it wrong to say there's incontrovertible truths in the world today? Is that wrong? Is it? Because we get a lot of backlash from it. And we see Christians, using it in a broad sense, who are very dogmatic about things that just don't seem to be right. And then we get hammered with it because we're also under the Christian umbrella. So is it right to be dogmatic? Paul's going to be dogmatic. And we're going to look at why was he dogmatic? And what was he dogmatic about? Because he's talking about the traditions of the Jews and the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's something that's very important. And so we're going to read through the rest of what he said here and then come back to him. Verse 14, "But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before them all, if thou being a Jew livest after the manner of the Gentiles and not as the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as do the Jews? We who are Jews by nature, born as Jews, and not sinners of the Gentiles." Of course, he's playing into the mindset of them that these were the sinners and the natural Jew man was not. Verse 16, "Knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ, that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law, for by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. If you ever want the gospel in a small package in one verse, mark verse 16. Paul just gave the gospel in one verse. We are justified by Jesus Christ alone. That's it. That's it. He slams it into one verse. How well he knew Jesus Christ. Remember, he didn't have this written yet. His relationship with Jesus Christ was so tight-knit, he could give it in one simple statement, just like that. And why was it so important? We're going to look at chapter 1 in a second to see why he was hammering Peter on this topic so hard. And then verse 17, but if while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves are found to be sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid. What a confusing statement that can be. We're going to tear that one apart in a little bit and look at what he was talking about. You see, there's a couple issues that Peter has popping up right now. As you look, certain men came from James. That's the church of Jerusalem, the church. And these certain men, who I believe, if you look at some who study this, they say, you know, James sent them to, you know, to instigate. I don't think James did that. Because for one, he calls them certain men. He doesn't call them believers. He calls them certain men, which suggests that they're not Christians. And so these certain men came from James, but they had a power over Peter that was seemingly unnatural. So when they showed up, they had this air of intimidation that they put right on Peter. Just by being present, they scared him. So these men must have been very high up in the Jewish community. He recognized them, he knew where they were, he understood the message, and he started to cower at what they said. Now, Peter, can you imagine him coming into your town, and he's talking to these Gentiles? Can you imagine the questions that they would have asked him? Wow, what was the Last Supper like? What was it like to see Jesus Christ crucified? What did he sound like? What did he look like? What was it like to see him resurrected from the dead? What was his body? You know? All of these things. And Peter, surely enough, he would get excited to share all of this with them. And Peter had this huge, huge reputation in the community for who he was. Because he was with Jesus Christ for 3.5 years being trained by him. And the stories he would tell would be phenomenal to these Gentiles. They never get to see Jesus Christ in the flesh, and he did. That's a lot of power to hold in the Christian church that was so small and volatile. And so it's important that Paul confronts Peter on this issue. Because Peter is a man, if we turn back to Proverbs, you flip back to Proverbs 25, verse 26, it says, a righteous man falling down before the wicked is as a troubled fountain in a corrupt spring. Peter held so much influence that a drop of corruption in his fountain was going to start handing it out to everyone else. This is why when you are a member of a church, and you sit there and you say, I hold no status. I'll tell you this, that when a visitor comes who does not understand Jesus Christ, they're interested to learn, and they want to find out who he is, you are way up on the totem pole. Way up there. You're at the top. You have been coming to this church for how many years? 10 years? You must be amazing with your relationship with God. They're going to think that you are holy of holy because of this. They don't understand who Jesus Christ is yet. And even another visitor who maybe is just, you know, they've been to church, they're coming in, you still hold a status to them. That's why it's so important that you guard everything you do, just like Peter needed to, but he fell. He cowered back and started doing traditions that he shouldn't have been doing. This is what happens when you start to see people. This is where it starts to get dangerous. This is where you start to see people wanting to please the traditions of a local church rather than the God of those traditions. This is where you're going to start to see them want to wear a suit and tie because you wore a suit and tie because they felt belittled without it on their body. And they think that suit and tie is going to give them some sort of status with God because it gives a status to you. And so Peter is playing a dangerous game, not just because he backed off of the Gentiles. It's because the Gentiles saw it, and they're going to say, well, Peter's doing it, so I should do it, right? Peter was circumcised, so, and he's doing that, so I should get circumcised? Paul is saying, no, you're going to undo everything Christ was working for in this church. That's why today when we look at our church and the traditions that we see across that huge Christian umbrella, that's where they start to come from. That's where they come from, is men are wanting to please men. That's it. Men are wanting to make themselves appear like they are pleasing to God. In short, what they're telling is, my tradition should be pleasing to God. And that's exactly what Cain did. He said, my tradition, my offering, should be pleasing to you, Lord. It should be. And then when it's not, you get angry. It's not. And so Peter is being poisonous at this point. I mean, to put it bluntly. And Paul's going to tell him, you're being a toxin to this church because you are telling them that your ways are over God's ways right now. So each one of you that's a member of the church, pay attention to what you do and what you choose to say and how you choose to present this church to someone else. Because what you say will be gospel truth to a visitor. It will be. What you say could either destroy them or encourage them to continue to come back. So my wife shared with me a story about when we visited a church, and when we entered in, we didn't look quite like the other members. It's progressive sanctification, folks. So we didn't look quite like other people because I got saved late in life. I didn't know how to leave my household fully, left for the military. I was learning. But we didn't appear like the other folks. And so when we came in, the comment we received was, are you sure this is the kind of church you're looking for? Ouch. I guess not. But that's the air that you'll get from someone who's following the traditions of what a Christian should be, rather than what a Christian should be according to God's standards. You're putting tradition over God. And that person's going to feel it. And so we're going to continue on. Because he says, but when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel. So these men, they were dissembling. That means they were covering up and masking themselves, cloaking under these traditions. And he says that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel. Let's go back to chapter 1. Because this is what starts to happen. It's a spiral that can occur. It's something that could happen here. And I think this is an excellent message to give to a church like this where it's not taking place yet. Because you can pay attention and stop it. Our last pastor used to call it firefighting. If you see it happening, stop it. Don't allow members to act like that. Don't allow yourself to act like that. Now's a good time to catch it when we're strong. So looking at chapter 1 and verse 8 and 9, I was talking with David and Daniel about this when we had an impromptu Bible study the other night. We were just talking about the importance of the gospel. And so chapter 1, verses 8 and 9 in Galatians says, but though we, or an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel unto you, that which we have preached unto you, than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. And then he repeats it. As we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you, than that ye have received, let him be accursed. Let him be accursed. The gospel is that important that it was emphasized twice because there's two things that you can do as a church. Two things you can do. You can give life or you can give death. That's the only options you can give as a church. So when someone comes in and you start placing traditions over the value over Jesus Christ, the values of your traditions over what Jesus Christ gave in his gospel, what you're giving is death. You're offering nothing to these people. That's it. They're going to walk in, go into hell, and leave going to hell. It doesn't matter what they wear. It doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't matter how they act. The point is the gospel. And Peter understood that. He was finally getting it. But when the traditionists came back, from the Judaizers came back, he cowered in fear again. That's why if you're one of the people who absolutely loves to give the gospel to people, do not ever let somebody take that joy from you by saying you're not following the ways of this church. Because when the ways of this church start to override the ways of God, we're going to have a lot of trouble around here. A lot of trouble. So don't ever back down off of the gospel because you are giving life to those people. Absolutely giving life. And because the gospel is the only way. That's it. It is the power. It is the one and only thing that you can do for somebody that will change them. Don't worry about how they appear or what they do. Let God do that. Just give them the gospel. And Paul is telling Peter, you stopped. You fell off the tracks and you're not giving the gospel anymore. So in short, when do you get to be dogmatic? When somebody is no longer delivering life, they're delivering death. Then you can be dogmatic. Don't be dogmatic about the paint color on the outside of the building. Good luck finding a Bible verse about that. Don't be dogmatic about how the chairs are set up. Don't be dogmatic about the type of suit you wear or how long a skirt is or about how what color your clothes are. I mean, even though, see, where's Matt Holcomb? He needs that one again. But don't be dogmatic about it. It doesn't matter. Be dogmatic about the things that matter. This is where us as Christians start to get a blemish on our record, is when people are being dogmatic where it doesn't belong. Don't be dogmatic towards the sinning person who is lost about something that is a virtue of God. Rather, be dogmatic about, go way back in the record, look at them. Start to be dogmatic where they're off. It's that they don't follow God, period. Make them a child of God. Be dogmatic in that area, and the rest of it will come. That's all you need to worry about. Don't worry about the rest. And so Paul is telling them that you're just delivering death now. And Peter is doing something dangerous because in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, we'll flip over there. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I like this because Brother Brunk was teaching over this. And it ties right in. It's amazing. If you listen to enough people talk about the Bible, you start to see the dots connect. And that's why I'm very glad that a church like this has men who will teach, men who will preach. I mean, not boasting about myself, but it's nice that there is a pastor who is training people who are trainable to take over and to do things. It was great that he could step out the door and things just kept going. The lights come on, the building gets cleaned, all the way to the pulpit being filled. There's so many jobs that need to be done in the church, and pastor has trained people to take over. And that's amazing here. That is not everywhere. So if you've never been outside this church, I want to tell you right now, that's not normal. That is not the norm everywhere else. I've seen churches where the pastor leaves and nobody shows up. That's what he's dealing with right now. And so this is not usual in a Christian community. So in chapter 12, Paul is dealing with the issue of the meat sacrifice to idols. And so as we look through here, he's trying to tell them that when you, a mature Christian, are doing something that causes a weaker Christian to stumble. So even if somebody's saved and they come in here, still your traditions can cause a problem with them. So make sure that that's not the issue. And so if we look down in here, I might have marked it wrong on that one. Which one is the issue of the meat? Going blank here. No. I went blank. But regardless, he's in Corinthians, he's addressed chapter 11. Thank you. Chapter 8, thank you. Yeah, Becca, you need to type your notes from now on instead of handwrite them because it's very hard. But Paul, he's addressing this issue of the meat. Because in verse 9, he says, "But take heed lest any means this liberty of yours," meaning the liberty that you have under Jesus Christ, you no longer are under the old traditions and laws of Judaism. He says, "But take heed lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak." To them that are weak. You never know who is weaker around you. You never know that. So when your behavior and your speech matter here a lot, they matter significantly. You have no idea who's struggling with what. Somebody could be struggling with a sin of lust. They don't need jokes. They don't need that. Somebody could be having an issue with a spouse. They don't need you making comments about that. They don't need all of this. What they need is encouragement. Because you don't know what happens because people can put on a pretty good face when they show up. You don't know what happens in their closed doors at home, that when they get here, you need to be careful. Don't show that you have any tolerance for those things. Don't show you have any tolerance for something that could cause somebody else to stumble. Don't. You have no idea, because they could be listening to you, and when they get back home, that gets amplified greatly in their life. Meanwhile, they just need you to stay true to who Jesus Christ was in that gospel. So, going back to Galatians, there's one verse I want to hit in here because it has to do exactly with how much traditions can start to permeate a church. And that is in verse 17 of chapter 2. It says, "But if, while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves are also found sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid." That verse is sort of confusing if you've never looked at it before in detail. But what Paul is saying, now that you see the context of what Galatians is all about, talking about the traditions that are going to rot the church, he's saying, "But if while we seek to be justified by Christ," meaning those Gentiles seeking to be justified by Christ and Christ alone, "while we ourselves are found sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin?" What he's saying is, if Christ and Christ alone is not enough according to your beliefs, because they're bypassing your traditions as to what you think they need to do and behave before salvation, that would be wrong. Because that means God's bypassing everything required for salvation himself. What he's saying is, the Gentiles, Christ alone, when he said Jesus Christ is the way now, that is the only way, and the traditions are gone, he came to kill those traditions. When he did that, he wasn't saying God is now a minister of sin because he's telling them to bypass all of your traditions. That doesn't make any sense. God can't sin. So either Jesus Christ is the way or your traditions are the way. It's one or the other. And so when Jesus Christ became the way, the Judaism, it went out the door. It's gone. So don't think that your traditions are something that everybody has to follow, otherwise they're sinning. And it's sort of hard to get that concept across just explaining it like a definition. But I want you to think of it like this, is look at, I grew up Catholic, so I immediately think of the traditions of the Catholic Church and what they were. But think of Amish. Look at Amish. How many traditions do they have? Tons. That's all they have is traditions. I bet if you go into an Amish community and you ask them how they know they're going to heaven, it's going to be traditions. That's it. And they're not going to know if they are or not. And so what they're doing is they're placing those traditions as the measure as to whether or not you can have salvation. And that's why all of this before with Peter is very dangerous, and Paul is being dogmatic about it, because he's saying, if you think there's a measure that they have to reach in order to have salvation, you're wrong. Don't think like that. There's no tradition that they need to follow first before you say, you've cleaned up enough that now you can have Jesus Christ. That's why if you say, you know, you have to go through these ritualistic rites, you have to go through and see a priest, you have to go through this baptism, you have to go through these words, you have to say all of these things, and then, you know, after years and years of effort, by the time you reach a certain age, you can ask for Jesus Christ to be your Savior, then you'll be saved. No, you're way off before. That person has no idea who Jesus Christ is. They have no idea what grace is. And I've said it from the pulpit before that I didn't understand grace. So when you start to get those traditions in the way, grace is lost. They're not going to understand. But just a parting thing I'd like to go over before I wrap up tonight. I want to turn to Romans chapter 1. It was a portion of something from the last time Pastor made the mistake of letting me up here. Romans chapter 1, I want to give you something to look at and think about as you go back out, because here in the church, when you're inside these doors, it's very safe. Very safe. We have our culture. We have our strange words we say to each other. If I say fellowship at work, I'm going to get looked at weird. There are certain things that we have as a as a church that culturally are normal to us, but people on the outside don't understand. And you say, well, does that count as traditions? It can if you aren't careful. Be careful. Don't think that they have to start to meet these milestones in the independent Baptist walk before they can come up to the altar and be saved. There's nothing like that. So what would we do if you have an influx of 500 pagans come into this church who just got converted by Butch at the Saturday market? What are we going to do? I know it sounds funny, but Butch talks a lot, so he could very well do it. But if 500 pagans came to this church at once, just like us, we can sort of be like the Jews at that time. As they come in, we're set in our ways. We know what to do. But as they come in, what are you going to do? You're going to be on eggshells. Because everything you say is going to be replicated by every single one of them. Every single one of them. You say, oh, you know, I just want to go out and do this one weekend instead of showing up to church. They're going to watch you. Say, oh, well, I guess you can do that and not show up to church. That's fine. Oh, you know what? He gets really upset about this stuff. I guess that matters around here. Oh, she said this, so I think that that's a measure of how spiritual I am. It starts to amplify with more people in here. So could this church handle 500 pagans coming in at once who just got converted? I would like to say yes, but that's a hard one. Would you know how to talk to them? Would you know how to disciple them? That's horrifying. Would you know how to disciple pagans? That's a difficult one. And so, as harsh as it sounds, is perhaps a church stops growing when the people aren't able to handle it. Because God will only act as much as you allow Him. And so, perhaps the church won't grow because the people aren't ready. You're not ready. You're ready for each other, but you're not ready for anyone else. Because your traditions have overrode what you believe is the power of Jesus Christ in someone's life. And so in chapter 1, we're going to look at end section of where I ended one time when I preached a while back. In verse 21 of chapter 1 of Romans, keep in mind that this is written to you as Christians. This is written to you. This isn't written towards an unbeliever to put fear in their body. This is written to you. Because that when they knew not God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations and foolish, and their foolish heart was darkened. Notice he's saying there, he's talking about them to you. So keep in mind what's going on with them. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And changed the glory of the uncorruptible God to an image made like to corruptible men, and to birds, and to four-footed beasts, and creeping things. He's discussing that this is the them that are out there. This is the them that you're trying to convert. This is what they look like. They're self-centered. They're idol worshippers. They're corrupt. This is the them you're trying to get to an us. So how are we going to do it? But as we look farther down, let's go to verse 26. For this cause God gave them up into vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use of that into which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one towards another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves the recompense of their error which was meet. Could you handle a bunch of homosexuals getting converted? That's a tough one. How do you talk to a converted homosexual when they come in this church? You ever tried to get one converted? Or did Jesus Christ not take enough lashings for that guy? So, what do you do when they show up? This is to you. To you. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. That is the nicest way I've ever heard that put in my life. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication. Yep, that's gonna be in their past. Wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable. Their anger can't be calmed down, in case there's kids in here who don't know what that is. That means their anger can't be put down. Unmerciful. Who know in the judgment of God that they which commit such things are worthy of death? Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do it. Are you ready for those folks? That's a good group there, right? That's the ones that Warren was always handing out tracts to down at the Saturday market. Maybe they haven't showed up yet because we aren't ready. Maybe God's going to let them go somewhere else. Someone else who understands that your traditions and the way we behave at Independent Baptist Church has nothing to do with salvation. Maybe He wants them to go somewhere else where they're not going to be belittled because of their past with all of this. This is the people you're trying to reach. That's why I said, you have no idea what happened in somebody's life before they walked in this door. No idea. Maybe they did used to be a homosexual. They're not going to talk about it in here. Maybe they did used to, you know, what do they say, that they, you know, that they were covetous, maliciousness, full of envy, murderers. You have no idea. Because when they come in here, you don't know who they were before who they are now as a Christian. You don't know. Maybe they got converted, like I said, by Butcher the Saturday Market. God wants them to go where they're going to grow. You always hear people say, you know, I hope you go to the church that God wills in your life. Is Independent Baptist Church of Anchorage the place that God wills for people to go in their life? Is this the place where they're going to grow, or is this place where they're going to show up and be put in the back section for the visitors? What type of church are we? Are we the one that puts God of the traditions before the traditions? Or do we have things backwards? You have to think about that. Maybe there are people sitting here tonight that have it backwards. Maybe we can't grow as much as we want to because God knows we can't handle it. We'd ruin it when they show up. We'd absolutely ruin it. We'd botch the whole thing for their growth because they walked in our doors. That would be shameful to know. Pastor McGovern, I know, teaches against that constantly, which is exactly why we're here. He teaches that you always have Jesus Christ behind every decision made in this church. And so if you find yourself getting bitter and upset about little things around here, the traditions are taking over. Stop. Stop. It doesn't matter. Just close your mouth. You're not adding anything. That's why Paul said, go back to Galatians real quick. That's why Paul said farther up in verse 6, he says, but of those who seem to be somewhat, you think you're somewhat. But those who seem somewhat, whatsoever they were, it maketh no matter to me. God accepteth no man's persons. For they seem to be somewhat, and conference added nothing to me. You think you're somewhat, but you add nothing. You haven't added a single thing. So I have to ask this, is when was the last time you tried to add something that mattered? You say, what's that? Well, Paul said, that's souls. When was the last time you tried to add a soul to this church? When was it? When was the last time you saw someone and you thought, that's what I need to do is to get them saved and get them into our church? When you went up and you gave them the gospel. I'm not talking about a tract. I'm talking about the gospel. That tract you're handing them, that's just a conversation piece. Talk to them. That's what they need. And Paul was telling Peter, you have absolutely poisoned the well of that gospel over there because you backed off for the sake of traditions. So as a church, don't let our well get poisoned. Be dogmatic where it matters, with the gospel, with life and death. That matters. Be dogmatic about it. Don't sit back and let someone who seems to be somewhat start to take over. Because that somewhat has no respect from God as to who they think they are. Don't let it happen. So that's why I see the kids sitting here. That's what you guys are going to have to do. You're going to have to be the ones who remember that somewhat adds nothing to God's gospel. And don't dare let them think that they will. Be dogmatic and confront it. Tell them, you're giving death. You're not giving life. Stop it. Stop it. So I hope that you'll think about that as you look at Galatians and you look at Romans and the type of people that we're trying to reach. So I think we'll close out with, is Mitch in here still? Have Mitch come up and he can close out the service. But I hope that you'll think about those things.